Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, stand by for our Super Tuesday Roundtable, but first, today's Bob Seska Show is brought to you by our Patreon page. In case you're not aware, we produce 4 podcasts every week. That means a new show every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, you might be wondering why you don't see the Friday show on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts. That's because our Friday After Party podcast, with all of its revealing discussions about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and politics, is only available through our Patreon page. So please help support this podcast by subscribing to our Friday After Party for just $10 per month. That's BobSeskaShow.com, or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, March 4, 2020, and this is a special roundtable edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Today, I've invited two of my regular co-conspirators, Buzz Burbank from Buzz Burbank News and Comment, and Jody Hamilton from the Bunker Podcast, to join me to recap Super Tuesday and what's ahead for the Democrats as we get closer to locking down a presumptive nominee. Plus, we'll look ahead to the general election and how either Bernie or Biden we'll take on the Trump machine in hopes of deposing our first tyrant chief executive. Meanwhile, make sure to support Buzz's show and Jody's show wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, let's bring in Jody and Buzz for our McLaughlin Group-style roundtable today. Thank you both for joining me today on this special roundtable episode. Normally, we do interviews on the Wednesday show, but right. Today, because of the huge news of Super Tuesday, and no matter who you're supporting in all of this, you have to admit that yesterday's events were gigantic. I think we're in now a new phase of this primary season. But you know what? Before we get into Super Tuesday, wouldn't be a show without some Buzz Burbank dad jokes.
It's great to be on the show with Jody again. Jody, I have to apologize to you and to everybody else for my disheveled appearance. a little rough today. On the way here, I got roughed up by Jill Biden. So that's why I'm a little disheveled.
She is Batman. Jill Biden is Batman.
I'm really, really glad Jody joined us today in case any anti-dairy protesters rush the stage.
I got you, man. Don't worry, I got you.
I feel safer. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that if Bernie Sanders wins, Aaron Sorkin is launching a new series about the White House called The Left Wing.
I just read that in the trades. I was just thumbing through Variety, and there it was.
Hey, if Mike Bloomberg wants to give away $500 million, I know a few podcasts he could support.
Yes.
Bingo! Yes, I completely agree with that. Mike Bloomberg, if you're listening, as you always do, please send it to me. Send it to
Mike
us.
Mike can do it.
All three of us.
Yes.
Right.
And more. Yeah. But because of last night's primary results, after the shows, I need a little help from you guys. I need your help in scraping the Tulsi Gabbard sticker off my bumper. If you wouldn't mind. just staying after a little for that.
Okay, yeah, I'll be right over. I'll help you out with that.
I felt obligated.
Those of you who don't watch The Outsider on HBO won't get this joke at all. But you know what? I saw a picture of Tulsi Gabbard on Twitter come up, and I said, oh, my God, El Cuco is done transforming. So, thank you very much. That was my little joke. Oh, why don't I get a rim shot?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
God damn it.
It really helps, doesn't it?
The invisible drummer behind me is taking a nap. So, okay. So Jody Hamilton from the Bunker podcast, from-the-bunker.com, also at sexyliberal.com. Buzz Burbank from Buzz Burbank News and Comment. That's at Buzz Burbank. Bank.com, realmnetwork.com, wherever you get your podcasts, etc. Okay, first things first. The story of the night to me was all about turnout. I mean, the energy is gigantic right now, which plays directly into this electoral model that I've been looking at for a couple of weeks now, constructed by Rachel Bitecover. And her model says entirely that this election is about the blue wave. It's about the energy going into this election. She is forecasting, and again, my ongoing warning is don't get happy, but she's forecasting a gigantic blue wave. And in fact, what she's saying is, to a certain extent, the candidate is not nearly as important as the amount of energy thrusting that candidate forward into the general election and then to election day ultimately. And what we had last night, everyone's been talking about the Virginia turnout. In 2008, it was around 976,000. In 2016, it was about 722,000. Yesterday, it was 1.3 million. That was now a full-on blue state, Virginia, and the turnout, especially in Fairfax County and some of the northern Virginia counties, was reflective of all of that. That's pretty. That's a pretty big deal, I think. And are we seeing that? I haven't seen the other turnout numbers from some of the other states, certainly Texas and California. I haven't seen the turnout numbers on that. Is this across the country, Jody?
Yes.
Are you, Jody and Buzz, are you guys seeing this throughout all of the Super Tuesday states?
I haven't seen the California turnout yet, but hold on. Sue, I believe it's Sue in Rockville, posted on Twitter,
yes,
what she found. Here it is.
A primary news source.
Yes.
Yes, she's
a brilliant news source. Absolutely. She said that the turnout in Virginia was up by 23%, South Carolina up by 21%,
wow.
North Carolina up by 20%, Texas up by 27%, Tennessee up by 19%, Maine up by 17%, Alabama up by 22%, Oklahoma 16%, and Colorado up by 12%. So,
amazing.
About a 20% average. And
yeah,
in the case of Virginia, the numbers were double the turnout of 2016 and even more than the turnout for Obama in 2008, which is amazing.
Yeah. Now, is Virginia an open primary state or is it closed?
I think it's open.
I think it's open. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I used to live in Virginia and you don't register as any party in Virginia. At least it may have changed since 1989, which is the last time I lived in Virginia. But at that period, of time, you could register to vote without selecting a particular party. Mm-hmm. So I think that means it's an open primary. Yeah. So this is all indicative that what we're looking at is a gigantic wave election. And I hope that comes true. Again,
I hope so too. The
nature of the emergency, and it's not necessarily Donald Trump. Let's be clear about this. I said this yesterday on the show, in fact. It's not that Donald Trump is this super colossus when it comes to his electoral strategy in terms of his chances of winning. I mean, he's at about an average of about 43% nationally as far as his approval rating. So it's an uphill climb for this guy. I think he's a weak incumbent, and he would have needed to face impeachment over trying to cheat in the election, looking ahead at a Joe Biden nomination, if he wasn't a weak candidate in the first place. But the problem is that the nature of his presidency and the ramifications of a re-election of Donald Trump, I think, puts this at a different level, where it's not just Trump. We're just trying to make sure that some sort of fluke doesn't happen that allows him to be reelected. I think that's a pretty fair explanation in terms of why the turnout is so gigantic. I mean, that's one part of it. But the other part, the other big story of last night, is the fact that I think on Saturday for South Carolina, African-American voters sent a signal to white voters, and especially white college-educated women, that this is the guy. And so I think everyone was waiting for, how are black people going to vote? How is the African-American demographic going to turn out? What's going to happen here? And then we all got that signal and said, okay, now they're all congealing around Joe Biden. We're all going to go in that direction, too. Is that kind of where we are, Buzz?
I don't know if I would characterize it that way, at least in its entirety. The success in South Carolina was a factor, and there's no question that the African American vote made that happen. Yeah. I don't know in these other 14 states from yesterday. I don't know if voters really said that to themselves going into the booth. I think it was a statement that we don't want a revolution. We want to get rid of Trump. I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's what many voters were saying, and it goes to electability. Exit polls showed that, let's see if I have this in front of me, younger voters did not turn out, for one thing, and that was right. One thing that hurt Sanders severely. Yeah. For all the fervor and the fierceness that we've seen online from young Sanders supporters, and for all the crowds that have turned out for him, these rallies or gatherings, perhaps in retrospect, because they didn't seem to go to the polls.
Yeah,
and that's what happened in 2016 with him too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's worse this time. He's actually doing more poorly this time than he did in 2016.
Wow.
I don't know if you guys have been hearing this, you know, because I have been an unabashed Warren supporter.
Yes.
I have relatives and other people that I know in real life that are saying she should get out because she's just pulling votes away from Sanders. And it's like, you know what? F you. It's the primary. She may, first off, now that the latest delegate count for her is at 61 and Biden's over 500 and Bernie's like 70 delegates behind him still.
Yeah, yeah.
Not counting the votes that he will get from the delegates that Biden will get from Buttigieg's people and Amy Klobuchar and now Bloomberg. He will get those votes at the convention, most likely.
Yeah.
If she drops out, fine. And then they're going, she better put her, support behind Sanders. She does whatever she wants.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Which way do you think she'll go, Jody? I was thinking about that this morning, and I don't know that I can predict.
I don't know if she'll endorse anybody right now.
Interesting.
You know, she might wait till the convention, until there's more delegates being,
Right.
I remember Hillary Clinton didn't throw her delegates to Barack Obama until the convention.
Well, and Bernie didn't stop fighting until then.
He didn't either. So, and for his supporters, I'm sorry, for his supporters to say, get out now, Warren, when he was such a jerk last time.
Yeah, I know.
They're not helping their cause, and that's Stephanie's been talking about this. It's not helping your cause if you're trying to bully. And like I said, I have relatives. If you don't vote for Sanders, you're voting for Biden. I was like, no, I voted for Warren.
Yeah.
We may be related, judging from.
Yeah.
As much planning as Bernie Sanders has done for this election, and this goes back. I mean, this has been an ongoing campaign since 2015-ish, so 5 years of infrastructure on the ground, and a lot of that being grassroots. I feel like they really didn't account for the fact that this young voting bloc is completely unreliable, and we saw that again yesterday.
It's tragic. I wish they were more reliable.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
But they're not. Yeah, that's the reality of it.
What's shocking about that is I look at news events like Parkland, for example, and the rise in kids, teenagers, high school kids in most cases, starting to get active in politics, and especially at the national level, and emerging as real sort of household names, pushing for gun control measures and so on. And I thought maybe, and this is me being foolish, I thought maybe that would account for at least a modest spike in turnout.
Too.
But that has not materialized.
Not among them. And the other challenge that Sanders is facing, well, there are several, actually. I think he's got a rough road ahead of him, to be honest, from the things I've been able to assess so far today. He missing the youth vote that he was so counting on is one. One is the caucuses are gone. It's all primaries from here.
Yeah.
And he doesn't perform as well in primaries as he does in caucuses. And the exit polls also showed yesterday that most voters are looking for somebody who they believe can beat Trump. And by a 2-to-1 margin in many cases, voters think that Biden is the more likely victor in a battle against Trump.
Yeah, and here's the calculus I think voters were going in with. And I still stick with my, you know, South Carolina African-Americans kind of said it's going to be Biden.
Vital.
And yeah, and, but yeah. But on top of that, I think the key with Joe Biden versus Bernie Sanders in terms of how they're going to proceed through a general election scenario against the Trump machine is that I think people decide. I think voters decided that the communist thing, as much of it is, I mean, it's complete bullshit.
Right.
The communist attack against Bernie Sanders. We all know that.
Absolutely.
But I think voters believe that that attack is going to stick to Bernie Sanders more than Ukraine, Burisma, Hunter Biden will stick to Joe Biden. And the reason being is, first of all, Joe Biden's a really nice guy. I mean, James Clyburn said it very nicely. He's a good man. That was the, I think that's one of the quotes that's going to propel Joe Biden. That's going to be the centerpiece of the Joe Biden image moving through the rest of this campaign. And then on top of that, Hunter Biden, Burisma, Ukraine, lots of Cyrillic language, lots of hard to pronounce names, lots of confusing conspiracy theories and so on. Apart from the people who believed in Pizzagate and all that crap, I think especially voters realized yesterday that that's not going to stick to Joe Biden the way communism, socialism, whatever they're going to throw at Bernie Sanders will stick to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Probably because of the videotape that we've seen, the 60 Minutes tape and some of the others that have popped up along the way. So I think that's making voters panic a little bit, too, about Bernie Sanders. Plus, we can't underestimate, and this is just a weird thing about Democratic electoral politics, we can't underestimate the influence of shows like Morning Joe. I think Morning Joe set this, you know, we used to joke about it in Blogosphere 1.0, the very serious pundits on cable news. It was the very serious thing was sarcastic and snarky with regard to that. But yet, I think people still take that seriously. Jody, do you see that as a factor, too? Do you see that the cable news punditry has somehow influenced Democrats to go with the safe bet rather than the untested alleged socialist?
For some people, sure.
I think it's more of a gut thing
than
it is a cable news thing, to be honest. I think that's just what people's guts are telling them, my guess.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, the other interesting thing about Elizabeth Warren, before we leave her completely behind, is she's still a major factor in this race, especially as it concerns Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Because as long as she remains in the race, that also works against Sanders, because there's the Medicare for All crowd divided. That's another. This race from top to bottom has been nothing but interesting.
Yeah.
And right now, to me, the dynamic to watch is the Elizabeth Warren effect on Bernie Sanders, along with the other factors that we mentioned. But we have gone in the last 24 hours from sharply or at least widely divided moderates to now the moderates are united and only the progressives are divided between Bernie and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So, we were completely subdivided. Now only the progressive side is subdivided.
Right.
I think I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to do a McLaughlin group question here. Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being most important, 1 being least important, how important is the vice presidential selection of either of those guys, given their age?
I'm going to go with the answer you've given. Absolutely crucial. I'll give it a 10.
Crucial, okay, 10. Yeah. What
absolutely
about you, Jody?
Very. I agree completely. I have 20.
20. Wrong! The answer is 10.
The answer is 10. No, I mean, it's super important because of their ages, and they're both old white guys.
Yeah, yes. I mean, we're looking, and I don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse here, because my focus is entirely on November 3rd and winning. What happens after that, we can worry about that tomorrow. But for now, I feel like we're kind of looking at, just for the sake of conversation, we're looking at one-term presidents, whether it's Joe Biden, whether it's Bernie Sanders. So the vice presidential nominee in all of this is going to be crucial, because they're going to essentially be the heir apparent to the whichever legacy it happens to be, Biden or Bernie Sanders. These guys are kind of in place to stop the hemorrhaging, to get us back on track as a country, and then we can proceed legislatively with some of the changes we want to do. But I think in the meantime, right, the focus has got to be exclusively on defeating Trump and planning for what's going to happen in 2024. Because again, I don't, I'm getting way ahead of myself on this, admittedly, yeah, but I'm seeing this as the potential for not only for Donald Trump to potentially run again, to pull like a Grover Cleveland in 2024, but also the potential for maybe Don Jr. or Ivanka or something like that down the road. So I'm just thinking in terms, so that has a near term necessity in terms of planning for that, because the vice presidential nominee of either candidate has to be prepared to face possibly another Trump in 4 years. And so that's kind of what I'm looking at with all of this. Now, in terms of Biden as the nominee, I was talking about this earlier, where Joe Biden is kind of framed as the good man, the decent man,
yes,
who is,
yes,
going to contrast himself against the tyrant Donald Trump.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I've said in the past week or so that I'm kind of backpedaling on is the fact that Joe Biden is not the greatest when it comes to attacking Donald Trump. But the way I'm backpedaling on that is to say that he doesn't necessarily need to be. And part of this is our conversation yesterday, Buzz, and part of it is a conversation I had with Kimberly Johnson the other day, which is to say that, again, the good man factor, the decent man factor.
Look,
the very contrast of Biden versus Trump is going to say all that needs to be said about Trump, right?
Right. And we, the Republicans, with this whole thing about Biden and Burisma, if that's going to be their strategy, and apparently it would be, they're going to run into the same trouble Democrats ran into when we tried evidence. You know what we found out? As hard as everyone worked, bless their hearts, the American people just weren't moved by evidence. Evidence did not move the needle. We found out you can have all the evidence in the world and it doesn't change anything. So what does change things? Emotions. And if it comes down to an election between nice and nasty, I'm pretty sure nice will win. And if we dumb it down to that level, and maybe we should, maybe we've all been overthinking it in that way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a matter of nice versus nasty.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. What do you think, Jody?
I think he's right, because Buzz is really smart.
Oh, stop it.
Yes, he is.
Oh, pshaw. Well, no, you know, Tom Hartman had an interesting, because he's also very smart, idea. And I guess the president of Mexico, AMLO, did this when he was running. He talked about who he wanted to pick for his cabinet while he was still running, before he even got his nomination.
Yeah, love it.
And so Biden and Sanders would be kind of wise to go, look, if I am the nominee, these are the people I would like to serve in my cabinet, AG Kamala Harris.
Yeah, look at the field they have to work
Secretary
with.
Secretary of Labor, maybe Warren or Commerce. And start going, these are the people, Secretary of Defense or State, maybe Pete Buttigieg, and start going, if these people are interested, I would like to offer them these cabinet positions, which tells the voters how they're going to govern.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Brilliant.
And they don't necessarily have to agree, like Julian Castro to do whatever, whomever to do whatever. These people don't have to agree to it, but the bubble can be out there, except Tulsi Gabbard, just go away.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. In fact, G. Gordon Liddy's favorite guy, John Dean.
John Dean!
Tweeted this the other day. He said, if Biden announces tomorrow, he will ask Kamala Harris to be his VP, Bloomberg to be his Secretary of Treasury, Elizabeth Warren to be Secretary of Education, Amy Klobuchar as AG, Adam Schiff as DNI, Director of National Intelligence, plus that he will prosecute all Trump administration corruption, .. race over. Exclamation
mark. Oh,
yeah. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
So agree with that. And so I think that's a really good bit of advice, the Mexico plan. Mm-hmm. Again, what that does is that creates a coalition around this very decent man. And you have kind of a team that is, I hate to say indomitable, but I mean, I think this would be like a dream team. I mean, this would be like, what was that year where the dream team played in the Olympics, the basketball team?
That's a sports ball question.
Sports. Yes. I love the sports.
not qualified.
Yes. That
you
was
like the sports ball.
it was Michael Jackson on that team, right? And
yes,
Michael Jackson,
Kobe Stakes, and who else?
Yes,
I don't know. I don't know who was on that team.
Yes, but it was Kobe and Shaq, and it was a huge team. It was an amazing team. Well, yeah,
I'm glad you're here, Jody.
Shaq, right. So yeah, I think that's a phenomenal idea. Obviously, it's one of those ideas that you would see in like a Hollywood movie, but. Stranger things have happened these days.
It makes Joe Biden look so much stronger if he has this group of people standing behind him. Picture just a photograph in your mind of just Joe. Mm-hmm. And now picture Joe with the people we've been mentioning behind him, like it's the opening of a TV show.
I
was wrong, by the way, with the sports. It was Charles Barkley.
Okay.
And
Shaq and Scottie Pippen, you know.
We'll fix it in editing.
Okay, good.
I don't think
Karl
Kobe.
Malone,
I don't think
Reggie
it was.
Miller.
I don't think it was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant is later.
No, he wasn't. He was. Yeah. He was later. Yeah. He was. Yeah. This was the '96 team. Was this team, and it did include Shaq and Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley. It was a great team.
I'll never be on ESPN. ever. But yeah,
I'm the Keith Olbermann of this show.
So seriously, I mean, I think in that sense, you'd have a bunch of really effective attack dogs. I mean, you'd have a bunch of surrogates, and I think this needs to happen.
You also have that image of strength. I want to really emphasize that. It's an image of strength. Picture that picture.
Exactly. And so what it also allows Joe Biden to do is to maintain that decent guy, the good man persona.
Yes.
So you dispatch the attack dogs with maybe, say, Bloomberg's anti-Trump messaging. Well, Biden maintains the good man persona. Biden also needs like the best of the best speechwriters, as far as I'm concerned. And the way he wins is to stay on script. Nothing goes out that is unplanned. He needs to stick to the prompter. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think he could take a Ronald Reagan approach to running. And I'm not talking about politically. I'm not talking about in terms of policy. But I'm talking in terms of being the elder statesman of the presidency. To be that nice guy, to smile and wave and deliver his speeches, and then let all of these people around him do the dirty work in the business of attacking, because there's going to be just a barrage, as we've seen for the last 3+ years, just this ongoing fire hose of news. And that's going to continue. But I don't know that Joe Biden has the nimble feet to be able to deflect all of those attacks.
No. But here's what put my, you know, nobody, and Jody, here's where I'm with you on Warren, is there has been and is no candidate in the race who would be as formidable in a debate against Donald Trump than Elizabeth Warren. Period.
Absolutely.
End of story. There's no wiggle room here. It's her. It's without a question. And then you have Joe, who's made a series of gaffes lately, as Joe tends to do. Trevor Noah greatly put my mind at ease last night on The Daily Show when he pointed out that in a debate, when Biden stumbles over things and, you know, trails off on the Declaration of Independence, the good news is Donald Trump won't know anything's wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
because he is too uninformed to be able to counter that.
Right. Right. Well, and that's also going to be a thing. I mean, that's going to be a thing until November 3rd. It's going to be a thing beyond that. They're just going to constantly attack Joe Biden
forever
for the gaffes. Right.
Right.
And yes, that is extremely frustrating, especially as someone who has followed all of Donald Trump's, you know, ongoing malaprops
We wouldn't have to worry about that with Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
But it
That's
just
true.
Gets down to she doesn't have the numbers. I don't
she
know why.
She doesn't have the numbers. I don't know why either.
I don't know why.
I mean, there was a great thing in Vox about why. I posted it earlier today. And it's a reasonable opinion on, look, people like me like her. But not everybody that votes in the Democratic primary is like me.
Okay, we'll get back to our roundtable here in just a second. But first, here's an assignment for you. Picture your face in the mirror. Do you see all those wrinkles around your eyes? How about crow's feet or large under-eye bags? Now imagine that they've disappeared. And I'm not talking about plastic surgery. I'm not talking about Botox or fillers or any of that crap. I'm talking about Plexiderm, a clinically studied topical serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under-eye bags in just minutes. It's the edge you've been looking for. Folks, I know you've seen all these products that claim to reduce the appearance of brown spots and things like that. Those are products that you need to use every day for months and months and months. But that's not the case with Plexaderm. In order to get rid of your fine lines, wrinkles, and crow's feet, under eye bags, and everything like that, all you got to do is wait 10 minutes with Plexaderm. Plexaderm can give you the confidence you'll need to be yourself at work or out with friends. The best part is Plexaderm goes on clear, so nobody's going to know that you're using it. Go to tryplexaderm.com and use my code VOICES for 50% off a full-size bottle of Plexaderm, plus an extra $10 off. That's right, 50% off, plus an extra $10 off. You can also get this offer by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code VOICES to the operator. Plexaderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexaderm.com today and use the code VOICES at checkout. That's triplexaderm.com, code VOICES. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
I don't think it's any secret that my preference, if I were to really get out there and start campaigning for someone, my preference would be Elizabeth Warren. But what I have seen online as far as attacks against Elizabeth Warren, one of the things I've seen mostly is it comes from the Never Trumpers. But this is just, I mean, it's a small portion of the voting population, but at the same time, they have a lot of influence. And right. And one of those attacks is it's more along the lines of a nickname. It's Liz from HR.
Right.
Buzz, remember Miss Bobby?
I do very well.
That's the kind of person they're comparing Elizabeth Warren to. And it is unfair and it is unwarranted because if she wasn't as tough, then they would accuse her of not being tough enough to go up against Donald Trump. So it's a no win for Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, and what I think it comes down to is that in this age in which political campaigns and especially candidates are based, I would say, in significant portion on the idea of identity. And I think people mm-hmm. saw, and this is just the most simplistic way to explain it, people saw woman lost to Trump, therefore woman can't beat Trump.
Right.
Elizabeth Warren equals woman, therefore Elizabeth Warren can't beat Trump. That is kind of the calculus happening maybe in some voters' minds.
I think there's an endemic subconscious prejudice against mm-hmm. women candidates. It isn't, uh-huh. you yep. know, even I think even in the minds of men and women who believe themselves to be enlightened,
yeah.
there is still that sort of prejudice that they aren't entirely aware of. And the other thing I've noticed, if I may, Jody, is that things seem to stick to women more than they do
yes.
to men. Mm-hmm. The whole Pocahontas thing with the DNA test and all that, you know, I haven't heard anybody talking about it lately, but it stuck with her image.
Yeah.
And it seems to fall off of men, but it seems to stick to female candidates like her and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah,
it does. And just to remind everybody out there in podcast land, Trump lost the popular vote by 9,939,015 votes, which yeah. included the 7 million that voted for a third party candidate and the 65 million that voted for Hillary Clinton. Right. So Hillary Clinton beat him anyway, but more people did not vote for him than yeah, voted for him.
That's true.
And so that's an important thing. And Hillary Clinton did beat him, and she did legitimately beat Bernie Sanders in 2016. And like you said earlier, Buzz, these are primaries now, and Bernie does not do well in primaries because primaries are actually more Democratic voting.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes check in with my mom, and my mom kind of mm-hmm. represents, I think.
You should call your mother.
That's right.
Never call your mother.
I really, really try. And what I do is, you know, I'll check in with her about who she's supporting on the Democratic side. And she's a Democrat now, and for quite a while she was talking about Joe Biden as her favorite. Why? He's a decent man. And then she kind of moved away from Joe Biden when Joe Biden kind of fell out of favor and wasn't projected to win. And I think she started to look at Mike Bloomberg. But every once in a while, the topic of Elizabeth Warren will come up and she'll say, I don't think Elizabeth Warren is presidential. And I wonder if that is just patriarchy.
Generational,
maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. But obviously, some of this, especially given the level of turnout among women so far on the Democratic side, women, I think, are generally in agreement, maybe not with that specific criticism, but if Kimberly Johnson were in here, she would say, yes, the patriarchy runs deep even into women absolutely. Democratic voters. And so that may explain also why Elizabeth Warren, because, you know, one of the things that I keep looking at with Elizabeth Warren is I think she's enormously presidential. And I'll tell you,
I mean,
at the very least, she has a presidential sounding name. I mean, yes. Elizabeth Warren sounds like it would be the name of the first woman president, right? It was, I mean,
call me kinky, but I want Liz from HR to run the country.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're not going to write in Miss Bobby from WJFK?
You know, and I really without going into what is a wonderful story about her, let me just say that she was gruff on the outside, but just as a sweetie, a softie on the inside.
Oh, she loved me.
I suspect the same thing is true of Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, yeah. Well, meanwhile, Mike Bloomberg is out as of today. He has endorsed, not unsurprisingly, Joe Biden. And it also looks like his team is going to continue working on ads, which I was very relieved to see and hear.
And podcasts.
Podcasts,
yes. Podcasting. And mortgages.
Yeah.
And speaking of tough guys and fights, how about, and we and very, very funny jokes at the beginning of the show about this, but how about those protesters rushing the stage? I mean, talk about a terrifying moment. I went right back to 1968, Bobby Kennedy, California. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these things start flooding into my mind as I'm seeing these two protesters rushing the stage. And then I'm thinking, how the hell did these two protesters get within swinging distance of, you know, someone who could be the Democratic nominee? I mean, there was a gap in security happening there, too.
With two dozen candidates, as we had initially, obviously you can't, the Secret Service cover all of them.
Right.
And nobody really knew
but
that.
But shouldn't he have that anyway because he's an ex-vice president?
He only got it for 6 months. And then, like a trial subscription, it runs out. And you're on your own, and you have to hire your own security or go without.
Yeah.
But the candidate should certainly have it. It's just that this election turned so quickly to basically a two-old white guy race that you probably couldn't get it in place fast enough. It has to be ordered. There's a process for getting it. I think a Biden campaign spokesperson said, when asked about is it time for Secret Service protection, they said, "Nah, we got Jill."
Yeah.
I mean, that was really their answer.
Yeah, because she did a thing. I mean, she did a
badass.
Whole. Rachel Maddow was saying. Rachel Maddow was describing it as a wax on, wax off maneuver. She did like a Karate Kid thing.
It kind of was. There's a detailed description, a blow by blow. Exactly. I guess the Washington Post slowed down the video and analyzed and wrote about every single move that she made, about grabbing wrists, and it was very detailed on how Jill Biden fended off this assault. Apparently, these ferocious vegans have also attacked or gone after, at least, both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Mm. So they're not new, but it's time now. We didn't know, really, until this week, but now we know it's time for Secret Service protection for all of the remaining candidates.
Yeah, I just, as an animal rights guy, I just am disgusted every time I see something like that, because I feel like every time that there's some over-the-top attack or some sort of pieing or whatever, what's the new thing, the glitter bombs and so on.
Yes.
That kind of shit terrifies me. And it's not just, I don't just feel terrified for the victims. Whether it's Ann Coulter or Joe Biden, it doesn't matter. It's just an uncomfortable thing to observe. But at the same time, I'm uncomfortable for the cause. I'm embarrassed for the cause because I feel like they set it way, way back, because people don't want to be associated with things that are embarrassing and mortifying. And so it's like the opposite of what we talked about yesterday, Buzz, with regard to crowd sizes, where people have a fear of missing out now when they see big crowd sizes happening on video, on social media, and they want to be a part of it. But likewise, if they see animal rights protesters storming a stage and doing something that was, in the moment, just, we joke about it now, but in the moment, it was a terrifying bit of live video happening in front of our faces. And people just don't want to be associated with that. So consequently, you know, the animal rights cause is kind of takes on this weird fringy thing, which it shouldn't take on.
Mm-hmm. I happily support the SPCA, and but if you want my glass of milk, you will have to pry it from my cold, dead hands.
That's right. Again, I don't know if that sprung out of who was criticizing dairy recently. Oh yeah, it was
Joaquin Phoenix
at the Oscars. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it was kind of pegging off of that.
I blame Devin Nunes's cow.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other upside of this gigantic turnout that we're seeing. Yes. Down ballot races, which are going to be so important, if for no other reason, to be a stopgap should the crazy thing happen, should the worst case scenario happen, which is Donald Trump getting reelected, we may win back the Senate. And it's already, I keep beating this horse, so that on the map, the Republicans are at a great disadvantage going into November 3rd because they have to defend 24 Senate seats to the Democrats, who only have to defend just a little more than a half dozen. So just by the very nature of the number of Republicans that are up for grabs right now, including Martha McSally, who's now losing to Mark Kelly, thank God, astronaut Mark Kelly. With that in mind, I think this level of turnout could be the thing that throws the entire Senate over the Democrats, maybe even with a margin of a couple of seats, and certainly adds to the House totals. And then the other important aspect of this, too, are the state and local races. Because, I mean, one of the things that we've been talking about all along is how the Democrats really need to focus a little bit more on state and local races, because that's where all of the, well, not all of them, but certainly where gun laws are being passed or not passed, as the case may be. Certainly a lot of these trap laws with regard to abortion rights are being passed at the state level, too. So winning back more state and local governments, I think, certainly at the state legislature level, is going to be crucial in this election. And why not continue to ride that wave, right? And so Adam Parkamenko said this about Maine in particular, looking at Susan Collins. He tweeted, "Democrats just flipped a state house seat in Maine by 15 points tonight." Wow. And it was in a district that Trump previously carried by 8 points. And he said, added here, "Terrible news for Susan Collins." And then the tweet of the night goes to Soledad O'Brien, who said, "I'm very concerned about this." I'm obviously mimicking Susan Collins every time Trump does something. Susan Collins, always very deeply concerned.
Politics is local, and absolutely, these down ballot races are important. I think it may be time to shift our slogan to "Vote Blue all the way through."
Yeah.
You might be surprised at how many people vote only in the presidential election and leave the rest of the ballot, the down ballot, blank.
Yeah.
If we can educate and encourage people to just, if nothing else, if you don't know, when in doubt, vote blue throughout.
Well, and that's going to be key. The other key to all of this, and this is the thing that makes me nervous about Joe Biden being the nominee, and this has nothing to do with Joe Biden himself or anyone surrounding Joe Biden. This has everything to do with the inevitable resurgence of the Bernie or bust hotheads who are going to use that as a threat, use their vote for, say, Tulsi Gabbard, who I think is positioning herself as maybe a third party run for this. I know she's not running for the House again, so she's free and clear to run whatever she wants to run. And stepping aside from a seat in the House of Representatives, that's a big deal. And there has to be some justification for that. It certainly can't be, "I'm running for president" in a serious way. It could be that she is going to betray the Democratic Party that she has been a part of for all this time and run as a third party candidate. And so my concern is that the Bernie or bust people are going to jump over and support someone like Tulsi Gabbard or whoever the Jill Stein candidate happens to be.
Some will, but I don't know.
I don't think all will. I think she only got one delegate in Samoa, right? She's not getting the kind of traction that Jill Stein got because Jill Stein just kept running for president all the time.
Yes. Yeah, she did.
So I don't see her getting the kind of traction that Jill Stein can get if Jill Stein decides to throw her hat back in the ring again. That little
From the numbers, we know that about 47% of Bernie supporters are not willing to support anyone other than Bernie. 53% of them, just over half of Bernie, are. Bernie's, the greatest argument against Bernie Sanders is 50% of his supporters.
I agree with that.
They have done probably more harm, I think, to his cause than good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And if you look at the numbers from 2016, and once again, but I'm right there with you, Buzz, on the fact that, I mean, one of the reasons why I don't support Bernie Sanders is because I don't like the behavior of his supporters. I don't want to be
half of them.
I don't
want to,
yeah, half of them at least. I don't want to be in league with that group. It goes to the fear of missing out thing I was talking about, the crowds. I don't want to be a part of that kind of idea, that mindset, that is, you know, the Bernie or bust mindset, the antagonism online, all of that. That's toxic to me. Yeah.
Were he the nominee, we'd all vote for him.
Right.
But if you wonder why we haven't been on the bandwagon to this point, Bob's just given the answer.
And then, so if you look at 2016, and these are the numbers that scare the shit out of me when I talk about don't get happy, this is one of the things, one of the justifications for that. So in 2016, Trump won all those Rust Belt states by less than 1% of the popular vote, about 10,000 vote margin in Michigan, 22,000 votes in Wisconsin, 44,000 votes in Pennsylvania. At the same time, around 51,000 Bernie Sanders primary supporters flipped and voted for Trump in Wisconsin. 47,000 Sanders supporters went for Trump in Michigan. 116,000 Bernie Sanders supporters voted for Trump in Pennsylvania. Those second set of numbers, those are more than the first set of numbers.
But I think that ship has sailed. I think this is a different situation than 2016 when a lot of Americans were looking for somebody who would go in and turn over the furniture.
Yeah.
And there were two choices for that, Bernie or Trump. Now, there are more choices than that, and the majority seems to be supporting the guy who's least likely to turn over any furniture.
So I
think this is a much different race, and I think you worry too much.
What? No, and that's a, you know what? That's both are really good points. Both are excellent points. I do worry too much. But I will say this too, that I think maybe what will cancel out the Bernie or bust people is Republicans who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, who want to save face, and the only Democrat that they're going to support is Joe Biden, because Joe Biden, as the good guy, as the nice guy, as the decent man, who doesn't necessarily flamethrow Donald Trump every day, it allows them to save face. It allows them to change their vote in 2020 from being Trump in 2016 to Joe Biden in 2020. And maybe those Republicans, those former Trump Republicans, maybe on the fringes of that red hat cult, who maybe are sick and tired of Donald Trump's incompetence and so on, they need a reason to be able to say, okay, I fucked up, but I don't want you to rub my nose and shit. So I guess Biden will work. And so that may cancel out the Bernie or bust people.
I think you're right. I think that some of those moderate independents like Bitecofer claims don't exist, which she's right. They don't exist. Mm-hmm. You lean one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I think some former Trump supporters in the Republican Party are old and want to get into heaven.
You know what? That's a really interesting insight. And you know what? I don't disagree with that. I think that's a fascinating angle on it.
And a lot of his initial voters, not the hardcore crazy ones. I actually saw a MAGA running free in Los Angeles the other day. It was weird.
Free range.
It was really weird. It was a free range MAGA, and it was on Ventura Boulevard, and it was very frightening. He said hello. I averted my eyes, but
Good
he didn't see the shirt I was wearing, so that was good. Anyway, so the thing is a lot of people were duped by Donald Trump that voted for him in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Those people have had their come to Jesus moment. Mm-hmm. They are not voting for him again. In fact, in California, Joe Walsh got 2.4% of the vote against Trump in the primary here, and so did Bill Weld. So, I mean, in LA County in particular, Walsh got 4%, and he's not even running anymore.
No, he's not.
Right.
But you know what? He had some good advice as far as Joe Biden in a general election goes. Joe Walsh tweeted today. He said, some guy on TV just said Joe Biden can't win in November because he doesn't have a message. He has a message, Joe Walsh says. Mm-hmm. And the message is, I'm not a horrible human being. I won't be I won't be in your face every minute of every day. I won't lie every time I speak, and I won't tweet a bunch of cruel shit. That is, that's a hell of a message. I think that's a winning message. I mean, it doesn't seem like it, but in this time, and again, one of the mistakes I made in 2016 was applying old rules and old assumptions to that election. And so I misread what was going on among rank and file voters. But I think this time, I think this time, something like this kind of message can really, really work, because I really think, regardless of who you are. Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, it also
it's a simple message for a simple nation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it speaks directly to something that is kind of unspoken right now, but it's certainly in the wind. I think a lot of people are feeling it. I'm talking about not those of us who follow politics 24/7, but rank and file voters. I think people are feeling the Trump fatigue in a big, big way. They're tired of Trump dividing their families around Thanksgiving meals. They're tired of their kids being ostracized, their parents being ostracized. The headbutting buzz that I know you and I have been through to a certain extent.
The fun, it was fun at first, but now it's not.
Exactly. So here we are. Let's do final thoughts. Buzz, you have any final thoughts on Super Tuesday and moving ahead from this point?
Just to pick up on that, I think, and thank Jody for bringing forth those numbers, and thank Joe Walsh for producing those numbers, because that 2-4% gives us some insight into the sort of peel-off we can expect to see on the Republican side. This yesterday was a win for the Democrats, but it was a win for democracy. I think it was a clear message that there will be a huge turnout this November 3rd. And I think it's nothing but good news for everybody, with the possible exception of Bernie, and he's not out yet. So this isn't over, and you could be shovel fighting, as you've predicted, Bob, but I think all in all, we're in pretty good shape now.
Okay, and Jody, final thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, this is going to sound really weird, but if Bernie is the nominee, he should pick somebody that's moderate as his VP choice. Somebody like a Beto. Because he needs Texas. Beto O'Rourke would be a perfect... I would rather him pick a woman, but Beto would be perfect because Texas. And people do like him. Or you pick a Val Demming out of Florida. You got they all have to be strategic in their VP pick. A Kamala Harris pick as VP, love her, but California's going for the Democrat.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to... Both of these men have to pick somebody that will attract, say, if it's Joe Biden, some progressives. And they both, and Sanders has to pick a moderate. He just does. And young, both of them have to be young. And I would prefer somebody of color and or a woman. And then you've got to be strategic on which state that person hails from. Because Florida is delegate rich. You know, you've got to think Texas, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan. You know, then you've got to also go, okay, Ohio would be great, except Sherrod Brown is our guy. And if we pick him, then the Republican governor is going to put, you know what I mean? You've got to kind of go that way too. And picking anybody from Massachusetts or California or New York would be just stupid.
And, you know, I'm leaning toward, and I don't disagree with you, Jody, on that in terms of geography, but I'm leaning toward the idea that maybe that doesn't apply as much as it used to these days. I think more important are identity, brand, personality. I think those things will apply much more. Balancing the ticket as far as identity goes, I think also is something that is going to be taken into consideration when people are choosing. Plus that element of being able to take over potentially in 4 years and run for president from that springboard. That's going to be important too.
I think it's important that both of them choose female and or minority. I think that's very important for either of the leading candidates.
I agree. And my final thought is don't get happy. So Jody Hamilton's from the Bunker Podcast, from -the-bunker.com, also sexyliberal.com. BuzzBurbank.com. Buzz Burbank, best hour of news every Thursday. Buzz Burbank Woo! News and comment. BuzzBurbank.com. RealmNetwork.com. Everywhere you get your podcast. Thank you both for penciling me in for a human-animal hybrid of our Tuesday-Thursday shows today. Really, really appreciate it. This has been great. We need to do this more often.
Consider yourself penciled.
Thank you. See you tomorrow, Jody, and we'll see you on Tuesday.
All right.
Have a great week.
Bye.